Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellison with the Digital Education Podcast. I'm with a friend of mine, Dr. Albert Cheng, and a repeat interview in some ways in regards to CARDIS Education survey results that we've talked about in the past, but some new data and some new research that he's done. But Albert is a CARDIS Senior Fellow and an Assistant Professor at the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas. He teaches courses on the history and philosophy of education, as well as education policy analysis. He is known for his research on character formation, school choice policy, faith-based schooling, and homeschooling. But the reason why we're talking today is because CARDIS and Albert put together with David Sickink a study and some research that they titled, What Do They Deliver? A report on American colleges and universities. And this is incredibly interesting to me because my day job is an academic and college counselor at a great school in San Jose, California, where I get to talk about next steps in life with my students. And we especially over the last 5 years, more so than ever before, we've had conversations of, is it worth it? Is college worth it? Is it worth what we're paying? Is it worth the time and energy, or are there better ways to kind of take the next steps in life? And this report was fun for me to read. So Albert, I'm just going to open it to that big question that you start out with when you titled this report, What Do They Deliver? So tell me, and maybe this will kind of lead us into the conversation. What did you find about American colleges and universities and what impact that they make on people?
Yeah. Hey, Eric. Well, it's great to be with you again. As you said, yeah, we set out to do a study on just to track, you know, trace and document the college experience of 4-year degree holders. You know, breaking out results by the type of college that they went to. So, you know, the regular public colleges, private religious colleges, and private non-religious colleges. And you know, our main aim here was to expand the conversation about what higher ed is all for. What's the value of a university or college degree? You know, I suppose to look at the maybe predominant narratives of why folks should go to college. Mostly it's cast in economic terms, utilitarian terms. It's about gaining human capital for you know, a future job. It's about you know, I mean, sometimes it's cast in terms of making an investment. You know, college is expensive, and so you make an investment, and you hopefully that investment bears out after you graduate with the increased income you get from having a 4-year degree. So a lot of it's cast in you know, those kinds of economic utilitarian terms. And what we wanted to do was broaden things that aren't measured or things that aren't talked about as much. So, for instance, how beyond just getting a job, how do students come out thinking about vocation? Do they come out feeling like they have particular moral obligations now that they've gotten this education? You know, how ought they live in this world and respond with the gifts that they've been given? Or, you know, what are the kinds of relationships that they develop on campus with other students, faculty, other members of the campus community? You know, what's campus life like? And how do the kinds of relationships that they form and experience there influence how they connect to others after they graduate? So, you know, we wanted to broaden out the conversation and have a fuller discussion about, you know, what is higher ed for? What's the good of higher ed?
So, and I think one of the things that I've always found interesting about the CARDIS surveys and the CARDIS results, it might be focused on, in particular, finding out about like one of the sectors or one of the types. And in this case, it was for this, you know, in traditional CARDIS fashion, it was the religious, you know, private institutions. But before maybe we dig into that a little bit, give me a positive that you learned about each of maybe the different sectors, the private schools, or the large state universities, which, you know, I've attended a private school and you attended a large state university. And so experiences are very different. And then both of us have attended those religious private, you know, institutions. So give me like one thing that really sticks out in your mind that this was a really positive that I learned about kind of this sector.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think so, starting with the public schools, and you know, I can attest to this, really, the advantage of cost there, that, you know, those are much less expensive, much more affordable than private institutions. And I think that's pretty much common knowledge. But certainly, you know, when we ask students in the survey kind of their main motivations for choosing their institution, you know, it's at least about twice as likely. So among folks that alumni of public institutions, you know, they reported, they were twice as likely to report that they chose their institution because of affordability. Look at it from a, you know, ask respondents, you know, so why did you choose your institution? The alumni of private non-religious colleges, you know, it's almost, 80% said that they did it because they had the desired academic program or the academic reputation. So, you know, these institutions play a major role in forming students and developing them on the academic front. And then, you know, on the religious education side, the private religious school side, you know, what I think what I was most struck by was their some of the, I'd qualify it, characterizes the nature of the relationships that the faculty and, you know, how connected do you feel to campus? You know, do you feel welcome, right, by faculty in class and on campus? Do you feel welcome by other students? You know, trying to get at that kind of aspect of the campus community. And, you know, private religious colleges, for you know, whatever reason, maybe part of their ethos or other unique features, you know, students that graduate, alumni that graduate from those places, rated the team most highly on these kinds of dimensions. You know, they expressed pretty high levels of peer support, and you know, I should note that actually even private non-religious colleges stood out in terms of a sense of belonging as well. But certainly is a tad bit higher on the private religious college side.
So Albert, one of the things, you know, as you kind of talk about some of this is, and as you learn about these and you kind of discover surprises in the research or you discover clarity. I think one of the questions as I was reading through it and had some friends read through it because it, you know, it involves our professional work. How much of this is descriptive of the type of people that choose these places, or how much of it is the impact that these types of places have had on the graduates? Or do you not even necessarily know that for sure, you know, at this point in time?
I mean, my guess is just, you know, kind of my own understanding of the three kinds of institutions, you know, these three types of institutions out there, that there's still something unique to each of these institutions. Institutions that contribute to, you know, the different kinds of formative experiences that are there. I mean, I can speak personally for myself, certainly, that, you know, the ways Cal Berkeley formed me and the ways Biola formed me were quite different. So, but, you know, as far as in our data, you know, we're unable to disentangle, you know, how much of this is really just the student, you know, going into a particular institution versus the institution doing something, something unique to the institution and their practices. But, you know, I mean, on that note, look, I hope that this also spurs some discussion among institutions to consider, you know, what's the nature of the kinds of educational practices that are there, that are present? How is communal life practiced in various institutions? You know, how much does that, how might that contribute to the formation of their students? And so, Look, this is it's a great question, and you know, certainly a lot more work can be done to tease that out.
So, and then even on that side of things, I was wondering, or I'm wondering about the continuity, right? You've started to do this research, you know, for CARDIS, kind of on the outcomes or the graduate outcomes of high school students, and now you're looking at just kind of the college side of things. I know that this research doesn't necessarily connect the two research, but are there some commonalities that you're seeing between the research or even just the types of questions that you're asking now because you've seen, you know, the research on the high school side of things and the college side?
Yeah, no, I think the common denominator between these two, you know, arms of study, I guess, these two research arms is, again, thinking about education broadly. So, you know, similar to the high school, secondary school data, you know, I mean, we explore questions like feelings of moral obligation, marriage and divorce. So, you know, what do your families look like later on? You know, I mentioned understandings of vocation. So, you know, questions about, you know, what kind of job do you want? I mean, is pay the primary motivation? Is, you know, a job that can help others? Is that, you know, a motivating factor? You know, is a job, do you view your job as something that fulfills a calling, you know, a religious calling? And so, look, you know, these are things that, I mean, the you know, the economic value of these things is unclear. And the thing is, you know, we often cast the value of education in a lot of these economic terms, things that are easily measured and quantifiable. And to some extent, you know, we try to quantify these other things that aren't being quantified right now. But, you know, again, I think all this, these exercises, play some role into, you know, I think holding a mirror up to, you know, not only schools and folks that are, you know, working in secondary schools or higher ed institutions, but, you know, to folks like myself in academia, you know, what is it that we're trying to do when we research this? You know, are we stewarding, you know, the resources that we have, the talents that we have to support institutions and seek the common good. And, you know, I think cast in those terms, you know, I mean, certainly the conversations that have spawned from the secondary work in the CARDIS education survey and also the post-secondary work now, you know, has raised these questions for myself to reflect on. What is a good education? And to unpack what we mean by good and value and you know, asking, you know, what's worthy, right, of an education. So, yeah, you know, we hope this kind of work will spur, you know, these kinds of, you know, would place, I guess, these elements on the table in broader conversations about education for everyone.
So, okay, I'm going to ask you two questions because I'm going to ask you to help me do my job. Right. Help me do my job better. What's something that, like, from, you know, because I spend so much of my time talking about colleges, I tell people this, I've been on 300 college campuses in the last 10 years. Right. And so I've visited, I've seen what, you know, how similar they are in so many ways. I've seen the ones that are just, you know, they're just outliers. They're just totally different than the others. And then I've seen all of these sectors that you talk about and how, you know, and I've had graduates go to all these places and come back and have phenomenal experiences, life-changing experiences. And then I've also had graduates come back and, you know, have miserable experiences at all types of these schools.
Yeah.
So if you're helping me as a college counselor do my job, like, what's a question that you would say you got to make sure you ask your students this? Or what's a piece of advice that you would give us as college counselors that says, hey, make sure not to forget this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really about exercising discernment of vocation. You know, so I think about my, so my own experience, you know, I had parents that had high expectations for me you know, kind of nudged me to go to Cal Berkeley and to push me to aim high. And I guess they, you know, they saw some potential there. And so, you know, Cal Berkeley turned out to be a great place to get a math degree and, you know, develop, you know, these kinds of academic skills that would be pivotal for the work that I do even now, right? And so, you know, all that education equipped me to be more faithful to what I do now. And so, really, at the end of the day, it's about exercising discernment and then trying to find the institution out there that fits with that. And, you know, I guess that's kind of maybe that's, you know, an answer that's way up in the clouds, you know, just do better at discerning what's good for the student. But, you know, I do think at the secondary level, you know, there's more that can be done, and not just among college counselors, but among teachers and parents and others folks at school to help kids discern vocation. I think religious schools and I mean, it just look, all schools, you know, they convey particular value sets. And so if I were to just, you know, pick on religious secondary schools, for instance, Christian ones in particular, you know, there is a tendency to talk about calling as if it's something that's purely in the future. And the thing is, you know, then what happens is kids go through school feeling like, well, I'm just in a waiting room. I'm permanently stuck at this airport terminal waiting for my delayed flight to finally arrive and take off. And then finally, when the flight gets here and I can board, you know, after college, my real life begins, because that's when my vocation really starts and that's when my job really starts. But you know, a vocation is something for the here and now. It's basically what you're called to now. And so, you know, being a student is a vocation. And I think that, you know, to convey that in clearer ways might help prepare students to discern their vocation at another stage in life. So that, you know, life and school isn't just a necessary evil that you're just, you know, kind of stuck there waiting for real life to begin. No, real life is now. And real life is now, and it's forming you in particular ways. And so, look, I think there's a lot to be done there in kind of recasting how we think about vocation and you know, how they conceive of what they're called to do in the here and now. So certainly, I think, you know, having that kind of conversation and stirring the pot for that would certainly assist with students in discerning. So what's next for me? And, you know, let's be upfront too, that there are many ways to, you know, live out a great life and live out faithfully, you know, even without having a four-year degree as well. So anyway, you know, I guess the one word answer is discernment, and you know, I'll leave it to you to unpack that some more. I mean, it's something I do for myself as well.
But you know, and it is interesting because you use, you know, kind of the terminology of vocation versus like job, profession. You know, a podcast that I did, you know, maybe about a year and a half ago was with Brian Dick of Colorado State University and Jobsology, where, you know, he's written and done a lot of research about vocation and, you know, and the discovery of vocation and how vocation changes and, you know, and how that leads to meaningfulness. And then, you know, the work that they've done. I think the other thing that's interesting to me, you know, is that one of the things that you pulled out is, you know, well, it was that vocation side of things. But then the second thing was the relationship side of things, you know, the Pew research. Or is it the Purdue Gallup research? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Really focuses in on, you know, that's one of the areas that when students during their time in college have deep relationships with a faculty member, a mentor, someone who guides them through this process that leads them onto better understandings truly of vocation and purpose. And, you know, that their like life engagement and happiness with their work, you know, in their 40s and 50s is significantly higher than, you know, those who didn't have that faculty member. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's maybe one of the questions that I had in this process. When you started the research, did you go looking for these themes like vocation and relationships and mentorship? Or were those themes that just kind of came out of the research that really kind of confirm maybe some of that other research that's being done in those other, in, you know, in those other organizations or other places?
Yeah, no, so certainly some of the motivations behind looking at some of the outcomes that we have came from the prior work that you mentioned, you know, this Purdue survey and, you know, thinking about, you know, the social fabric that exists today, connectedness. I mean, you know, these are big themes that folks talk about, I mean, not just in higher ed, but broadly in society and in the public. And so, you know, the idea of exploring the kinds of community connections that exist in higher ed, certainly born out from that. And, you know, as an aside, I just to get back to the question of how can I help you do your job, I guess, is that, you know, I think it's important to mention to students, too, that, hey, you know, college is going to form you because of the relationships that you have. You know, you're going to learn how to connect with folks, to relate to folks, and this goes beyond just, you know, treating folks nicely, right? I mean, that's all part of it. But what's it mean to be in relationship with somebody at some level? What's it mean to, you know, I guess this idea of friendship as a virtue, you know, we don't think of friendship as a virtue too much anymore, you know, and that's something, how to be a friend and live that out is something to be cultivated. And so, look, I mean, these are important themes in kind of the broader public discussion that we all have, but certainly it also comes into play in, you know, counseling students. Hey, you know, why should you go to college? Sure, there are, you know, human capital gains to be made and skills and job prospects to be obtained. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that are cultivating you and forming you. The kinds of practices that you engage in relationally with others probably are going to stick with you more than, you know, what you learned in your last microbiology class. And so it's going to be important to, you know, bring to the fore that, hey, you know, the formative aspects of the, because of the kinds of connections you make with other people on campus, they're going to be borne out in significant ways in your life later on.
Albert, I mean, I think this, you know, it's incredibly helpful and this research is great. You use the word kind of discernment, you know, for students as they kind of walk this path. And, you know, the interesting thing about discernment is it usually doesn't come from just by yourself.
Yeah, right? Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it comes from the wisdom of others, the wisdom of, you know, people who've walked the journey before. It comes from being mentored, you know, and having people kind of walk through this process with you. And, you know, and that's where this research is so great, because it enlivens the conversations. It adds to it. And one of the things that I think about in this process is with my students, I really talk about with them purposefulness. Mm-hmm. You know, is that you, this college experience, and I had it in multiple places. I've been blessed that, you know, that I had transformative experiences at two undergraduate institutions, you know, and at two graduate institutions, and to walk that journey and to be formed, like you said, to be formed by these places, to be formed in a way of thinking, but also a way of being. But I think there is a purposefulness that, you know, that people can read this and people can look at the college experience and walk into a college and say, I'm choosing it for these reasons. And here's what I know I might be missing out on because I didn't choose something else. Mm-hmm. And so here's how the opportunity is for me to create a life experience that's just not reliant or fully or completely reliant only on that institution to provide all of those aspects of what I need. Because I think about, you know, the small college I went to, you know, for my first 2.5 years of undergrad, and it was that college that had a huge impact on me, but it was the local community too. Mm-hmm. And people in the local community and places where I got involved in the local community from a church aspect, but then also from a service aspect, as well as from relational aspect in other ways. And, you know, so I think there is that, it's that interesting point of discernment and then discerning and then being purposeful about mm-hmm. what you expect to do when you get there. So in this research, I mean, I thank you because it helps me do my job well, and it helps me think about the work that I do, you know, more meaningfully.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear.
So thanks again, Albert. Hey, real quick, any interesting research that you're coming out with, just to give people a teaser?
Let's see. Well, you know, speaking of CARDIS, this is coming this summer. So CARDIS Education Survey has, for the past 10 years, been focused on the U.S. and Canadian experience. We are getting ready to launch a CARDIS research for Australia. So our neighbors down under are going to be participating in this this conversation with us as well. So be on the lookout for that coming this summer.
Very cool. Thanks again, Albert. Appreciate your time.
All right.